take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. Get you started with some headlines you need to know. Shake-up post-draft is not unusual, and it's happening in Seattle. They're releasing center Justin Britt, according to multiple reports, and have told right guard DJ Fluker that they're releasing him as well. Significant but not surprising moves as they keep moving around their offensive line. The team will clear about $12.2 million total between those moves. Obviously, this is part of what happens after the draft as needs are found in the draft and money can be saved. So part of the fallout from that are cuts to existing rosters. Also in the NFL, some quarterback news for the Saints, as well as has been well reported over the last couple of days. They're closing in on a one-year deal with quarterback Jameis Winston, but they doubled down on their investment in backup Taysom Hill as well. We all know that Taysom Hill has been one of the more conversational pieces of what's going on in the NFL. Well, instead of giving him a one-year $4.641 million tender that they previously offered him as a restricted free agent, they've torn that up and they've now done a two-year deal worth $21 million, including $16 million fully guaranteed at signing, plus $1 million more in performance incentives, a source told ESPN's Adam Schefter. So we may not know what his future quarterback is, but we do know at this point that he's getting paid as he continues to figure out what's going on next. And Atlanta-based attorney representing former Tulane basketball player Tashawn Hightower has said Hightower's brother fired a gun that killed a 24-year-old man on April 8th. Hightower's brother shot the victim in self-defense. This is important as Hightower was charged over the course of the weekend. So they're trying to figure out what it means moving forward. His attorneys have said that the movement was made in self-defense. We'll see how that plays out moving forward. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Don't forget about the All-In Challenge, the fundraising effort happening among athletes, teams, leagues, and celebs to help with coronavirus crisis relief. 100% of what's raised, all of it, 100% of what is raised, will benefit organizations providing food to those in need, particularly kids, the elderly, and frontline workers. You can visit allinchallenge.com to see once-in-a-lifetime experiences and items. Just a few examples. There are sports experiences ranging from throwing out a first pitch at the next World Series to UFC experience with Dana White and actress Halle Berry. Heck, you can go to a Vegas Raiders game and check out that moment with CeCe Sabathia sitting in a suite. All sorts of items there. And now there's a chance to perform on stage and have dinner backstage with Kenny Chesney. You'll be taller than Chesney, as I'm just saying. Huh? Or the ultimate Nashville experience with Brad Paisley. That includes a meal, a Nashville's hot chicken, a trip to the Boot Barn to get fully decked out. And finally, Paisley takes you to the Grand Ole Opry. Opry to be a backstage, a live show. You won't stay backstage, though. You go on stage, help him perform. Come on. These are incredible opportunities. If you go to the site and you see that a lot of things being bid on are out of your price range, that's okay. There's a whole section of Enter to Win. That's the section you can go to where it's as simple as $10 buys 10 raffle tickets. That's all you got to do. Those raffle tickets enter you to win, and you're part of a great cause. 100% of the proceeds benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you want to participate and learn about how these organizations can help, visit allinchallenge.com. Get out there and share a little Nashville love in some of those. So I want to keep getting your take. Grade your favorite team's draft. Tell me who the team is. Tell me what grade you give them, and tell me why. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, 888-729-3776. That's how you get into grade your favorite team's draft. We'll get some of your take in just a second, but Mel Kiper came on the show today, came on with First Take, to talk about his confidence in the Bengals specifically after the draft. This is what he had to say with Stephen A.
Tremendously confident. I thought they had a really good draft. Remember, they added four defensive backs in free agency, DJ Reader on the defensive line, and on the offensive line, they benefit from Jonah Williams coming back. They really had three first-round picks. Joe Burrow, T. Higgins was the first pick in the second round, wide receiver out of Clemson. And Jonah Williams, last year's first-round pick, didn't play. He's back to be the left tackle and help Joe Burrow. So overall, I thought they really did a good job, and I think this team is really well fortified from a personnel standpoint moving forward in a division that's going to be highly competitive. Cleveland Browns get Jedrick Wills, Jack Conklin to help that line. Baltimore had, the best draft to fortify that already strong talent base, and the Steelers are the Steelers. So what a division the AFC North should be.
Mel Kiper Jr., appreciate you being on the show. Great job as always. Very, very thank you. Thank you very, very much for that, sir. But I got to ask you a question. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is there a new GM? Is there a new president of football operations? Is there a new dude running the Bengals that I'm not aware of? I just want to ask that question. I just want to make sure I ask that question to you before I even go on my little soliloquy. Is there someone new running the Bengals that I don't know about? Can you answer that question for me?
I thought we had this discussion last week, Stephen A., but Mike Brown's there. Mike Brown, I've known to talk to a long time, and he's had a lot of winning teams. And you talk about winning, not winning a Super Bowl, but got to two, had successful teams. It got to the playoffs, didn't win because it got some bad breaks with an injury to Carson Palmer and a bad penalty late against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I already told you, I'm not going to repeat all the things we talked about last week, Stephen A., with the success. Now, how do you measure success? If you measure it by playoff wins, I'm with you, Steve. I can't argue that point. You win that argument. But if you say they are this organization that can't win, doesn't know how to develop a quarterback, that's false because they have developed quarterbacks. I mentioned all the stats about those numbers and where they rank. Mm-hmm. I mentioned all the success they had in the regular season with the 6-10 win seasons since 2003.
No.
So I just don't like the bashing of the Bengals as this worst organization in the NFL. They're nowhere close to the worst organization in the NFL.
With all due respect, being as exceptional as you are, what you're not exceptional at, Mel Kiper Jr., is quoting me accurately because I never called them the worst organization in football, nor did I ever say they don't win games during the regular season. I lamented their postseason success or lack thereof and them being notoriously cheap, willing to cut corners instead of going all out to win for a fan base that has been starving for them to win something. Even you can't dispute that. Now, when we look at them, Joe Burrow being there, I love it. I love T. Higgins as well. I love that as well. Please don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying to you, Mel, is this. When it comes to the Cincinnati Bengals, when we saw Vontaze Burfict and them have a multitude of players, what we lamented throughout the years was the culture that exists, the people Marvin Lewis was willing to bring in, the absence of discipline that they had exercised, and the fact that you had a notoriously cheap executive that looked to cut corners instead of go all out to win for this franchise. That's all I said when you highlighted for Max Kellerman how there's about four or five other teams that didn't make a Super Bowl, never won a Super Bowl. Nobody said anything about that. I didn't ignore the fact that Kenny Anderson took them to a Super Bowl in the 80s or Sam White was their coach and stuff like that. I mean, the icky shuffle and all. I didn't lament that. But since for the last damn near 30 years, that organization, Mel Kiper Jr., because of Mike Brown, has been highly suspect. And you can't deny that. You can't.
I can.
You can't, Mel.
I can, Stephen A. I really can. See, you're saying two different things. You're saying you're not bashing him, but you are. You're saying you made a comment, Stephen A., that Joe Burrow went to, like, the worst place possible for a quarterback. Didn't you say that? So, it's not the worst place. No, it's not. It's not the worst place possible for a quarterback. I brought up all the successful quarterbacks they've had and how they rank in the National Football League. So I just think the tone of it suggests that they are. I'm saying the tone of what you're saying suggests they're the worst. I say Mike Brown has had success. That's all I'm saying. He's had success. How you measure that success, we can debate. But to say this is the worst place for Joe Burrow to go, I think was erroneous.
First take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Getting heated. I will say Mel Kiper Jr. is right. We love to trash Andy Dalton. Let's remember, Andy Dalton has been to the playoffs with the Cincinnati Bengals. We love to trash the Bengals. The Bengals have been to the playoffs recently enough to have Andy Dalton, their quarterback, in the playoffs. I'm just saying, I understand that it hasn't been great, but let's not pretend that it's suddenly been this epic generation of awfulness coming out of Cincinnati with the Bengals. First take, your take on ESPN Radio. ESPN News. Let's get a little bit of expertise on this here as ESPN NFL analyst Dan Graziano joins us. Dan, first and foremost, you are rocking that beard looks good, dude. Like, I'm trying and I can't get anything to grow in. Like, kudos to you, man. I saw it on TV all weekend and I thought, man, that is good work by you.
Well, I appreciate that. There was no plan. It just kind of happened. I started at the beginning of April and I don't know, man. It's getting to that itchy phase, and I may need to take it off come May. But it's been, it's been one of those times where you kind of feel like, why not? It's not like you're going out in the world too much these days, so maybe try something.
I think
new.
We should try it. We should have everybody come in at the end of social distancing and have like a beard off, and I think you'd be one of the favorites. Vegas would put some money on you, Dan.
if you're going to do that, let me know soon so I don't shave, because then I would be behind. You know, I would like to have the running start if possible. So let me know sort of whether that's the plan, and if so, what's at stake.
That's amazingly, that is the most accurate statement for everybody at ESPN. Like, we got to tell them what's at stake, and then once it becomes a competition, things get real. So let's break down a little bit of the NFL draft. And Max and Stephen A. And Mel were just having their debate on the Bengals in general. When you think about Joe Burrow and Cincinnati, why in your mind can this be successful for the organization when they haven't had tremendous success in the past?
Well, as you were just saying, I mean, the first 5 years after they drafted Andy Dalton, they did go to the playoffs, and obviously they didn't win games, and they were well known for that, but it's not as if it's been forever since the Bengals have had a good team. They had a strong offseason in terms of, you know, some free agent moves, more free agent activity than we're used to seeing from them, and I think, you know, they really believe that the energy that the Burrow pick brings will be felt throughout the organization and ideally the fan base, and they just see him as the long-term bet, as someone who can kind of pull them out of their recent short-term doldrums. And of course, their overall, I mean, you know, it is a franchise that has gotten a reputation for obviously not doing much winning, and it is the butt of a lot of jokes, and they just feel like Burrow's the kind of guy that will sort of take the underdog mantle and run with it, because, you know, he just has that sort of inner drive to him. So, yeah, I mean, they were sitting there at one. They got offers for the first pick. They didn't consider any of them. They were locked in on this player who just won the Heisman Trophy and the national championship and set records and all that. And if you're going to be excited about a guy, this is the guy. So excitement is a good thing in Cincinnati, where it has been in short supply in recent years.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. Jason Fitz talking to ESPN NFL analyst Dan Graziano. You mentioned that they fielded several calls in Cincinnati. Some reports were that the Dolphins were one of the teams calling. They stayed where they were. They get Tua. But what's it say about their belief in Tua that they were trying to move up to number one to get Burrow?
Well, I don't think they were the only ones that would have had Burrow rated ahead of Tua. I mean, look, the issue with Tua is not ability. It's the long-term health concerns, right? There are NFL teams that believe if a guy got hurt in college, he's a good bet to get hurt in the pros. And if the Dolphins were one of those, if the Dolphins were one of those teams, they probably wouldn't have picked him. But, you know, if they harbor some of those concerns, you have all these picks. You had three first-round picks, two second-round picks. It makes total sense to at least find out, hey, what's available to us? Can we get to the one pick and take Burrow, who is the probably the higher rated prospect at this point because of the year he just had and because he doesn't come with the same medical concerns? Obviously they weren't able to do it, and they end up with Tua, who, you know, remember, go back a year, we were thinking, oh, Tua to the Dolphins because they're going to get that number one pick. So it may have been their guy all along. Burrow surpassed him because of the season he had and because Tua got hurt. He surpassed him in the eyes of a lot of people and a lot of teams. But that doesn't mean the Dolphins were ever fully off of Tua. I think it was just due diligence. Hey, can we get up to the one pick? And if so, you know, is that a guy that we want to take over Tua because he doesn't come with the same kind of, potential issues?
We're talking to Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL analyst. What else really stunned you? Was there something that stood out in the draft that, other than what we've talked about, that really made you say, okay, wow?
Well, I mean, the first night it was the Jordan Love pick by the Packers, and, you know, covering them this weekend and just kind of talking to the people around that organization, really a long-term focus to the Packers draft, without question. And I think, you know, that bothers a lot of fans, and there's some speculation that it'll bother Aaron Rodgers, who's trying to win another Super Bowl before he's done. So we'll find out about that as time goes on. But, you know, the Packers are a long-term focused team. They just went 13-3 last year and made the NFC Championship game. There's a perception around the league, a lot of teams, a lot of people, that it's going to be a very difficult year for rookies to have an immediate impact because, you know, there's not really going to be an off-season program or much of one. And, you know, you're not going to be able to get your rookies ready to the same extent that you usually do. So to go all in for a quick fix may not be the smartest way to go when you already have a good team. And you're thinking, you know, we want to continue to have a good team for the next 5, 10, 15 years. So the Jordan Love pick was an eyebrow raiser, but obviously it's a guy they feel very strongly about in terms of what lies beyond the Aaron Rodgers era, whenever that does end. And I think it's hard for people to get their their head around it because, oh, there's so many receivers in this draft. They need receiver. They didn't take one. But they view the draft a little differently. They view it as we need to continue to build our team for the long term as opposed to we need to plug immediate holes.
Was that long-term consideration also part of the logic for the Eagles in taking Jalen Hurts in the second round?
Yeah, as I understand it, look, I mean, they're all in on Carson Wentz. Obviously, he's got the big contract. But my understanding on Hurts is that they view him as the kind of overall athlete that can do for them something similar to what Tate Hill does for the Saints. Now, you can argue whether that's the case. Hill ran a lot faster than Hurts did and all that. But that's a way they feel like he's a player they can use while they develop him as a quarterback. And then down the road, who knows? Does Carson Wentz continue to be a guy that gets hurt? Is he a guy that doesn't last forever? If he is a guy that lasts a long time, can you develop Jalen Hurts as a quality option for other teams and then get something for him down the road in a trade? It's something we saw Andy Reid do when he was a coach in Philadelphia, and Doug Peterson is an Andy Reid disciple. And so that fits that kind of pattern in terms of, look, let's get this guy in that we really like, and we can develop him in our system with our coaches and then see what happens. We'll see what we have in a couple of years. And in the meantime, they do feel like he's a guy that can help them out even while they go with Wentz at quarterback.
We're talking to ESPN NFL analyst Dan Graziano. So what does the Patriots' lack of selection of quarterbacks say to you?
Well, it says they do like Jared Stidham, who they drafted last year, and they want to continue to develop him. Again, same point as with the Packers, right? You draft a quarterback this year, you know, it's going to be a challenge to get him ready to be your starting quarterback this year. Maybe the Bengals do it with Burrow. Maybe the Dolphins do it with Tua, but also maybe not. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick. Maybe the Chargers do it with Herbert, but maybe not. They have Tyrod Taylor, who they like. So if you're the Patriots and you draft a quarterback now, you're just kind of adding one to the mix. And they do like Stidham. They feel like he had a good developmental year in their program. There are some veteran options still out there. You can maybe do an Andy Dalton trade. You certainly can sign Cam Newton. And there are other options that are going to likely arise as the offseason goes along. So Bill Belichick does not panic. He doesn't rush. He considers all options. He has multiple plans going at once. And right now the plan is Stidham, and let's keep poking around to see if there's an option that helps us. I think they'll add another quarterback. I just, you know, there wasn't one in the draft that they felt like was worth bringing in that they felt better about short-term or long-term than they do about Stidham.
Dan, speaking of signings and trades, Yannick Ngakoue is sort of an under-talked about name out of Jacksonville at this point that has made it very vocal he doesn't want to be there. Nothing happened during the draft. What's the future with him and the Jags specifically?
Well, he said he doesn't want to play there anymore. And, you know, they elected to go through the draft without trading him, which means that they're okay with either calling his bluff or getting 2021 picks for him. So that probably strengthens their leverage in trade talks. And also with the player, they go back to him and say, look, we couldn't trade you. We couldn't get what we thought you were worth. Think about coming back and playing for us on the franchise tag. Think about signing with us long term. And if it doesn't work out and he refuses to play and he's still holding out come whatever, July, August, whenever training camp starts, you could see a situation like you saw in Houston last year with Jadeveon Clowney. He wasn't traded before the draft or during the draft, but by the time they got to close to training camp, they figured out he wasn't going to come play for them. So they ended up getting what they could get for him. They didn't get as much as you would think they could have got for him. And I think the Jaguars would not love to be in that situation with Ngakoue. But, you know, maybe they still think they can talk him back into coming back. It doesn't sound like it. It certainly sounds like that relationship's broken. Anybody who was following on Twitter last week while he was hollering at the owner's son on Twitter obviously would doubt it. But, you know, they felt like they weren't getting enough in return. And they feel like waiting till after the draft, they can maybe still get the value that they feel he's worth. It would just be in terms of picks next year instead of this year.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at Dan Graziano, ESPN. Dan, as always, we appreciate your time and expertise. Thanks for hanging out with us.
All right, Jason. Thank you.
This Graziano stuff is going to – he's Graziano. This Ngakoue stuff is going to be interesting to keep an eye on. Also, as Dan has pointed out several times and is really smart for a lot of people that have had their eye on when and how players could be signed, let's remember that 4 p.m. tomorrow is the deadline with the CBA. So what happens after 4 p.m. tomorrow is that any signing doesn't factor into next year's compensatory draft pick formula. It's very complicated, but it means if you sign somebody today, it would actually could hurt you if you're trying to get compensatory picks next year. If you sign them tomorrow after 4 p.m., it doesn't hurt you. So some of these guys like Clowney that we haven't seen any movement on, or Cam Newton that we haven't seen any movement on, we could see tomorrow after 4 p.m. Eastern. Going to be interesting to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on Dan's Twitter as we get ready for that. All right, you guys are stacked. You want to talk about it? We want you to talk about it. I want you to grade your favorite team's draft. A bunch of you guys on hold, so we'll let you get some of your take in. 888, say ESPN, 888-729-3776. We're going to take some of your take. Plus, the Patriots did not draft a quarterback. What does that say about their commitment to Jarrett Stidham? We will break all of that down, including your take coming up. First take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Taking your take, grade your favorite team's draft, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Let's squeeze one or two here in. Sean from New York, your favorite team's draft. Tell me who it is, tell me the grade, and tell me why.
Hey, Jason. Buffalo Bills, A-. I think when you think about depth, they added depth in the most important places, running back, defensive end, and then getting Jake Fromm in the fifth. I think it's a home run by Bean and McDermott once again. Great draft for them.
Yeah, you know what? I don't disagree. I'm interested to see what happens with this Fromm pick, because Fromm couldn't be any more different, let's be real, than their current quarterback situation. Just the way he's built, the way he plays the game, couldn't be any more different. But A.J. Evanessa is a great defensive player from Iowa. I'm surprised he didn't get some first-round love. Zach Moss, I think, can have a lot of success. Gabriel Davis, like, they got themselves some more weapons on a team that's going to have a lot of expectations coming into this year. So I like it for the Bills. Let's just see how they piece together the expectation portion of it. Tim in Virginia, your favorite team, the grade, and why?
B-minus. Sorry about that. Dallas Cowboys and a B-minus. I think they really failed in the second round. They had an opportunity to get Jalen Hurts out of Oklahoma. I'm sorry, Dak Prescott has not shown anything in the 4 years he's been there. It's all been Ezekiel Elliott, not Dak, that has got them where they've been. Jalen Hurts would have definitely came in, and with the year sitting behind somebody, say, like Cam Newton, if they picked him up in free agency, would have been a great franchise quarterback.
Man, here's the thing. I say this with kindness, but I think we should party together, because I want some of whatever you're partying with. Look, if Dak Prescott was out on the open market today and every NFL team in the league had the choice between Dak Prescott and Cam Newton, every single one of the NFL teams that we are, every single team in the NFL would take Dak over Cam today. If Dak was in the draft today against Jalen Hurts, every single team in the NFL would take Dak over Jalen Hurts. Let's not get any of this twisted. I mean, I was talking earlier about how the minute you lose hope in your quarterback, you feel like your franchise is hopeless. For whatever reason, there's a section of Cowboys fans that have just decided that Dak stinks. I'm not willing to say that. The Cowboys draft to me was spectacular. I mean, CeeDee Lamb coming in at 17th overall might be the best wide receiver in this draft. For many people, he was tops on the board. He's going to change the entire way you have to defend this team. So now Zeke is going to get absolutely nobody in the box, because you're going to have to deal with Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. So that's tremendous. And Diggs in the second round, Diggs is a cornerback out of Alabama that a lot of people had going in the middle of the first round. You got tremendous value out of Diggs going 19th in the second round. That's not a good pick. That's a great pick at that value. There's nothing I don't like about the Cowboys draft. And Dak Prescott is a better quarter. You give me the option of Dak Prescott versus Cam and Jalen Hurts for the next 5 years, I'll take Dak all day, every day over that. And I will do it without hesitation. That's my take on it. Keep telling me your favorite team. Let's draft their grades. You can get in on a 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Going to take more of your take in a second, but let's get to some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, that comes in the form of one of the more surprising portions of the draft, which was no quarterback selected by the New England Patriots. So the question is, do the Pats need a quarterback desperately, or do they believe in Stidham as their future? Marcus Spears joined Max and Stephen A to talk about it today.
I don't know if Stidham's that dude. I don't know if he's that answer. And you're replacing Tom Brady,
So, again, I think they desperately need something. Don't get me wrong. You could play with house money, per se, when the GOAT departs from you. You could sit up there and say, okay, what did you expect with life without us? But based on the defense that you have, which is pretty damn elite, if you give them any kind of offense, they should be productive, which means you need a quarterback to pull that off. And I'm not sure they have one.
If anyone deserves the benefit of the doubt when it comes to evaluating the talent on his football team and not just worrying about the name brands, it's Bill Belichick. How many years now have we gone into seasons, even when they had Tom Brady, and said, not this year, not the Patriots, and they wind up with a dozen wins and at least in the AFC Championship game? By the way, Brady, a sixth-round pick. Did they have a starting quarterback with Brady? Yeah, that's why he gave him the job. Matt Castle, did they have a starting quarterback the year that Brady got hurt? Matt Castle won 11 games, 10 out of those 11 games, and got a big fat contract off that. Now, he might not have been a good starter for another team, but Jarrett Stidham isn't playing for another team. Jarrett Stidham's playing for Bill Belichick, and Jarrett Stidham looked good in the preseason last year. And Jarrett Stidham, Belichick believes, can be a starter. I don't care if it was Jason Statham, let alone Jarrett Stidham, if Belichick's like, yep, we're giving that dude the football. He didn't work a deal. There were plenty of veteran quarterbacks around. He didn't overpay for some veteran. He thinks this guy can get it done. How about Garoppolo? How about Brissett, right? So Brissett they didn't think was a starter. They moved him, but Garoppolo they wanted to start. He had a 10-point lead in the Super Bowl against Patrick Mahomes. You know, he throws one pass on a dude's steps, and he's a Super Bowl champ right now. So if Belichick believes for an organization which for over 20 years now, two decades around, looks at guys and forget the name brand, forget about what everyone thinks is the sexy name, we're putting a winning football team on the field. If he thinks Stidham could be the signal caller, then if anyone deserves the benefit of the doubt, it's Belichick. I believe Stidham's going to be a good starter.
Max, I'm 100% with you, and I love when we can agree. But let me go back because Stephen A. mentioned the SEC. Jarrett Stidham obviously played at Auburn. Auburn was a two-loss team with the chance to get in the playoff because Jarrett Stidham, the starting quarterback for Auburn, went in back-to-back weeks and was able to beat Alabama and Georgia. So Jarrett Stidham is formidable.
First take, your take on ESPN News. Marcus Spears making a great point there at the end that a lot of people aren't thinking about with some Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. Stidham has had some incredible moments in his college career. Now, in his last season, it didn't necessarily go the way some thought that it would, but my God, we have to acknowledge, and I had the chance on Saturday morning to work on ESPN Radio with Laura Rutledge. We were filling in for Daria Mel on Saturday, and she talked a lot about Stidham and the belief in Stidham at Auburn, the belief in Stidham in Foxborough. I mean, it is fair to say at some point that the Patriots see him every day. And this wasn't a question, as Dan Orlovsky smartly said during draft coverage, of Jarrett Stidham or, you know, some epic quarterback. This was a, how do we grade the Jake Fromms of the world, the Jacob Eastons of the world? Do we grade that quarterback higher than we grade Jarrett Stidham? And we got a clear answer on that. The clear answer was no. The Patriots were looking across the board, not just at the poker hand that they have, but also that the poker hand that was available to them. I have no problem with the organization being patient at the quarterback position if they don't believe there's a better solution out there. And so far, there hasn't been. Now, does that mean that I don't believe that they'll bring in somebody still? No. And that's why, as we mentioned earlier with Dan Graziano, tomorrow's 4 p.m. deadline makes a lot of sense. After tomorrow at 4 p.m., whoever you sign doesn't affect your compensatory draft picks for next year. So that's a system that they have where they basically say, here's what you lost and here's some draft picks we'll give you to make up the difference. So I would expect some movement on the quarterbacks after tomorrow at 4 p.m. And I think the Patriots are still going to be on that list. Don't forget, by the way, tune into The Last Dance. I'll let the behind the scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We're taking your take. I want you to grade your favorite team's draft. Tell me who your favorite team is. Then give them a draft. Graph trade. Ken in Florida, favorite team grade and tell me why.
I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. I give them a good A. I like the draft picks. For CeeDee Lamb to fall down to them like that was incredible. I enjoyed that. That was nice. We've got our cornerback and all of our needs addressed. We've got some nice defensive guys coming in, the Neville kid and the Anai from Utah. I like both those picks. I don't know about the DiNucci thing, but might as well try out a quarterback. Maybe he's a practice squad guy. but I think the Lamb thing is going to change the whole landscape of the Cowboys on offense. It's going to open up. No more double coverage on Cooper. You got Jarwin and Gallup out there. I think it's a great time for the offense. It's going to give Ezekiel bigger holes, and I'm just looking forward to the season.
Yeah, and I love all of what you just said. For the DiNucci thing, by the way, that's Ben DiNucci, the James Madison quarterback. He was a Pitt transfer. And by the way, to me, that was clearly drafting for backup quarterback. I mean, I don't think that that's a problem for teams. Like, we forget sometimes that there's value to drafting a guy that maybe isn't going to go out there and crush the rest of the world, but it's going to stay in your system, learn your system, and be your backup quarterback moving forward. Jay, in Cincinnati, I'm hoping you're a Bengals fan. So tell me about your favorite team, draft it, and then let me know why.
Listen, I'm a Bengals fan, but they get a D. A D minus. And picking Joe Burrow, that was a no-brainer. Everybody in the league would have picked him. Moving off of that, they took T. Higgins. They should have took Pittman from USC. He's a better receiver. And this is the thing that kills me. They should have went after that offensive tackle, the left tackle, and get him from Washington. Washington, they traded that pick for a fifth and a third-round pick. The Bengals need help on the offensive line. That's who they should have picked. So the Bengals, once again, they failed us. They failed Cincinnati.
Wow, that's a hot take. I'm a little surprised to hear that, frankly. I thought the Bengals had a good draft. I'm going to disagree with you for their offense particularly. I think T. Higgins is a great choice. He's lanky, but he can go gadget arm and get the ball from anywhere. I mean, I saw T. Higgins 3 times in person this year, and his ability to high point a football is incredible, and he's got a ton of speed. I don't mind any of that. Plus, as far as their offensive line is concerned, they lost their top pick in the draft last year. He comes back. That's going to make the line a little better. I think the Bengals had a good draft. Eddie in Wisconsin, your favorite team, your draft grade, and tell me why.
So I'm a 49ers fan. I'm going to score them an A-. I wasn't a big fan of them trading away Buckner and letting Emmanuel Sanders go, but they replaced both those guys with younger, cheaper options. From a front office perspective, I get what they did. They freed up a lot of money. And then going further, Joe Staley retiring, them making a trade for Trent Williams, and then them making trades to free up and get more cap space by getting rid of Marquise Goodwin and Matt Breda, put them ahead so that they can get a contract extension for George Kittle, again, increasing their salary cap space. I just thought it was smart. I wouldn't give them a full A because I wish they would have gone with a little bit of secondary. Because I don't think they have enough secondary depth. Besides that, I thought they did pretty good.
Yeah, well, and let me say this. You know, if you look at ESPN's needs, we had them with needs at safety, corner, guard, linebacker that weren't filled, but offensive tackle was filled in the draft particularly. But I give them an A+. Look, I think Kinlaw is a great, to your point, cheaper, younger. Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State is somebody that we had Herm Edwards, coach of Arizona State, on Golic and Wingo last week when I was sitting in for Trey, and he flat out admitted they didn't get him the ball enough. And also, don't sleep on Juwan Jennings out of Tennessee, wide receiver there that wasn't utilized in the best way at Tennessee and is somebody that can play. So I think and then you add Trent Williams into that whole mold. I mean, the 49ers came out of the weekend, I think, a big winner across the board. Keep telling me your favorite team, your grade. I want you guys to chime in on that. Plus, we're going to get more of your takes, and so many of you guys want to give your takes on the draft. Plus, the NBA might be opening up certain practice facilities. What does that mean for the league returning? You'll hear what First Take thought next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed the second hour of the show today, fear not. It's right there for you on demand in the First Take, Your Take podcast. Brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checking or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, NA member FDIC. I'm going to get your take in just a second on your favorite team's draft grade. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But there was some big news out of the NBA, as it looks like NBA teams are considering opening practice facilities in municipalities that are allowing that to happen in a world where they're going to maintain social distancing. It could be at least a sign towards what's to come for the NBA. Stephen A. chimed in on that today.
I think it speaks to the reality that we'll likely have an NBA playoff this coming summer. That's what I believe this is about. I think this is a great sign for that. I'm not sure. I'm with you, Max, in terms of the speed with which this has happened, because we both still agree we don't think that states should be opening up anything at this particular moment in time. But I do love what it says. It says that the NBA is hell-bent on moving forward. I think that as progress continues to be made, that this says we're going to have an NBA playoffs come the beginning of July. That's what I believe.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz, and I'd love to believe the same thing. I want to believe the same thing, and why not be positive? You know, why not at least look at that as an option? Great. But we also have to acknowledge that we live in a world where every single municipality, every single state is going to decide as they are ready to open at different times. So as much as I want to think that this is a great step towards that, let's also acknowledge that the NBA is going to have to deal with competitive balance issue if certain players are able to train at a different level than other players before we get to a playoff. It's very complicated. Nothing about this feels easy for the NBA moving forward. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We've been asking you to grade your favorite team's draft. Let's take some calls on it. Austin in Idaho, give me your favorite team. Give me the draft grade, then tell me why.
Favorite team, Kansas City Chiefs. That's where I grew up. I think we got a good, probably A-. Our first pick, dangerous pick, in Clyde Edwards. Every pick after that, though, I felt like it was more of us trying to counter what everybody else in the AFC West was doing, drafting, you know, speedy guys and, you know, receiving and on offense. And all of our defensive picks, man, I think we did what we needed to try and slow those guys down. So pretty happy overall.
Well, and that's a pretty fair point. Thanks for your take on it. I'll say the entire AFC West drafted for speed, right? We saw that across the board. You run fast, you got into the AFC West going in right now. That is going to be the most exciting division in the NFL next year to me, because I'm not sure anybody can stop anybody with the way they're playing it. Ivan in Montana, give me your favorite team, the draft, and then tell me what you think.
Hey, Fitz, love the show. Hey, I'm a Chicago Bears fan, and I would give them about a B-. I don't love the Komet pick, but only because Jimmy Graham got paid $16 million. If he wasn't paid $16 million, I think it'd be perfectly fine. Nagy loves to run two tight end sets, and I think Jimmy Graham is going to help him learn the game. He's a stud tight end, no doubt. Jalen Johnson, our second pick, is a mauler out of Utah. He's going to be a great cornerback opposite of Fuller. And then Vildor and the speedy wide receiver out of Tulane, Mooney, he's going to be really good.
Yeah, I think the Bears got some good weapons, and thanks for your take on it. Yes, they have 10 tight ends on the roster, but Cole Kmet's somebody that can play and play at a high level. So they're going to be looking at him as a big part of the future. It was fun to go through a day and actually have events to talk about. The Will Cain Show. Will's got you covered on everything in the draft. I'm sure he's living on cloud nine because of the Cowboys. Thanks for hanging out with us on First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio.